Cole.
Here.
Cunningham.
Here.
Aguilar.
Here.
Faulkner.
Here.
Gomez.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
McClellan.
Here.
McWhirter.
Here.
Rios.
Here.
Roberts.
Here.
Salas.
Here.
Sankey.
Here.
Okay, with that, we clearly have a quorum. I, just as a matter of housekeeping, we will do items 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the consent calendar. Then we'll have a, we'll go into closed session, and then we'll come back out, and then we can finish the remaining regular items. So I do have several requests to speak under public comment. We have a limit of 5, so we'll do, we have 5 speakers that have requested time, and I will call those and ask them if your name's called, to be prepared to jump up to that microphone as soon as you can. Oh, I'm sorry. We do have approval of the minutes of December 14th. Hang on. I've got a motion over here and a second. I heard from this side. Okay. Motion by Cunningham, second by Cole. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we'll deem the minutes to be unanimously approved. We'll move on now to the public comments. Each speaker will have 3 minutes. The first speaker will be Lisa Fair. And the second will be Martha Welch.
Good morning, Board of Directors. My name is Lisa Fair. I'm the president and business agent of the Amalgamated Transit Union, ATU. I'm here because we have been in contract negotiations since September of last year. Back in 2012, ATU gave up the baby with the bathwater, okay? And you all, some of you that sat on the board is aware of that. However, we were close, and then there was a curveball that was thrown, and I can tell you that ATU, under my leadership, will not sit and wait for crumbs to be raked to the floor for them. We want fair and equitable wages. You have received, back in 2015 and 2017, the highest award that you can get for any transit agency off of the backs of these operators. So what I want to say is this. We just want fair and equitable, okay? There's no fat to take and trim. We will not trim any fat, not why I'll take and sit in this chair as the president and business agent of this local. And we're just here informing you to just take and do the right thing with us. We have not reached impasse or any of that. The last session that we had actually was 2 weeks ago Tuesday, and I canceled it. So the only thing that I'm just saying is when you go into closed session, find out what the issues are. But there can't be any takeaways. There's nothing left for us to give you. We gave it all to you back in 2012. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Martha Welch. She'll be followed by Michelle Krug.
Martha Welch, I used the chat line the other day, and now it's gone. I called and they said they're looking, but it's still gone. Yesterday I looked and it was still gone. It's, you can't check right now on your website. It doesn't work. Now, on the 11, why it doesn't meet right now goes to D, and no, now you say the trolley, but it's not close to that also. Also, 929 is gone, so the 11, you don't tell if the 12 will go the same stops right now, because you don't tell us that, because right now the best thing you should do, the 11 and 12 about right here, one south and north would be that's what you should do. Sorry about that. You should do that, but I don't think you'll do that. Now every year, Monday through Friday, I use 24's trolley. you have a workup for eight days. What are you doing there? What are you doing right now? What are you doing right now? I'm going to look at that every day and tell you next month. I'll tell you what you did, because I don't think you. I don't think you. What are you going to do in 8 days? I don't know. I like the 3 and the 5 because you're having more buses on that. That's one thing I like with your changes. To me, this you're mean because you have this caller, and he wants to control you, and I know what he does. He says don't look, and the phone number, and he lies and lies, and he doesn't use his name. It's 1,000 names, and maybe me, because that's what he does. He wants to control everything. The contractor. He calls the contractors on your side to not raises. That's what's going on. You guys have a lot of money, the directors and all the head have a lot of money, but not the drivers. And so you guys don't do, you know, in bathrooms. We don't have bathrooms. Only the drivers have bathrooms. We don't have benches out all over this on the Broadway. It's so bad on Broadway that you change the rapid to the regular one. You change them like this, so it's confusing to people. You can't, if you only busted 992, it's only one stopped all the stops. You're mean to us. You changed the 11. It's the worst thing you ever did. And you know why? Because I take 11 sometimes. And that's what's going on. Ralph's will be gone now. You can't go to Ralph because that's a popular stop for the 11. That's going to be gone. You know, you don't take care. You don't do the right thing right now, because you take that whole from G to 4th, the 6th Street or something like that. No, nothing will go. Won't go there at all. And people like the same bus. It's easier. The same bus is transferring all the time. So you guys don't do the right thing in this county. You get awards, but what for? I don't know, because you don't have all these things.
Martha, that's 3 minutes. Thank you. Okay, next speaker, Michelle Krug, and she'll be followed by Soshi Levy.
Thank you. Good morning. I am here to plead to maintain the 962. So particularly my San Diego and my national city representatives, please look at maintaining the 962. I'm feel grateful that it did not happen in January. I hear it's still potentially going to be changing its route. They're not taking away the 962, but you are looking at no longer having it go through Paradise Hills, which is where I live, to get to that I'd have to switch over to another bus, and most of my trips are already three changes. So I really would appreciate maintaining the 962 as it is, because what it does is it allows me to go through Plaza Boulevard, where that's where I do my banking, it's where I do my shopping. There's so many things that it would make it much more difficult. So again, I'm advocating for the 962. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Next speaker, please. Soshi Levy, and followed by Clive Richard.
Good morning. Good morning, MTS board members. My name is Soshi Levy, and I own and operate 7 businesses inside the McDonald's trolley station since 2006. I've seen many businesses come and go at this McDonald's, and I'm very familiar with all the pedestrian activities, changes that are happening at this border station. The most important thing, in my opinion, is that people have safe access to transportation, to shelter, and also I feel like they are not being taken advantage of by government authorities or unfair businesses and aggressive solicitors. The landlord at this building was very fair with us, the tenants, the building customers, since I can remember. I originally opened the second floor retail business inside McDonald's in 2008. When the 88 elevator and new door was first opened, everyone, including the elderly, disabled, pregnant women and children, a lot of luggage, and most of the bus customers behind McDonald's used this elevator and the back door. It is a necessity. When the doorway to the to the walkway behind McDonald's was suddenly closed in February of 2016, our businesses dropped immediately. And the general public who railed and on the elevators began complaining about being having to walk all around the building and to the bus stop or from the bus stop into McDonald's. These people became isolated outside and separated from the 24-hour shelter McDonald's businesses are offering and security guards. I'm here today to urge the new MTS board to help keep this door open. The people are very happy that it was reopened and our businesses were affected immediately. And we would like it to remain open. They should not be denied of a sense of public safety and convenience. Thank you for your consideration of San Isidro and our business community. Please, if you have any question, you can always contact me. Thank you.
Yeah, Soshi, thank you. She also submitted, you should have amongst the papers in front of you, a letter addressed to the board. Thank you. Okay, the final person on public speaking is Clive Richard.
I'm wearing this because I can't hear. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Clive Richard, and I am very fond of telling people I live in the second supervisory district of the County of San Diego and the ninth council district of the City of San Diego. I guess this is going to be an interesting day. I've watched this board for several years now. I'm thinking 25. Maybe I'm losing track of the dates. But I've watched this organization change from the Metropolitan Transit Development Agency to MTS. And then I've watched this new organization, I guess. That's what it is, a new organization. And I just want to say that I hope that this is the beginning of a bright future. I'm noticing that something I have rarely seen, I think the last time it happened was Susan Golden was mayor. I'm glad to see that our mayor is here. I've always wanted to see the city represented by its mayor, and it's good that the mayor has enough time to spend on my special issue, which is public transportation. That's a good thing. I'm not going to take much more of your time because this is a very busy day for you, but I'm just going to say I wish you well and Happy New Year. And I hope our future is a lot brighter than it looked like it could be. Thank you.
Okay, that concludes all the public testimony, and we'll move on to the next item, which is the election of the chairperson, vice chair, chair pro tem, and the committee appointments. Let me start with you, Mayor Salas.
Yes, thank you very much. And first of all, I would like to thank the members of the nomination committee that served with me, David Arambula, Mona Rios, Guy, and Myrtle Cole. And I also wanted to thank Sharon Clooney and Karen Landers for shepherding us through the process, giving us technical advice when we needed it. And I was really pleased to serve with such a diligent group of people, and so and thank them for all their input that they had in this process. So before you, you have the slate of our slate that we hope that you will approve, and the slate is as follows. Recommended for chair is Georgette Gomez, vice chair is Mona Rios, and chair pro tem is Lori Bragg. So I suppose now that we'll take each item up, each person up separately, each position up separately?
Yeah, we'll have to do that. Not the committee appointments, but the elected officials.
Yes.
And we also, just to remind you, can entertain on any of those nominations from the floor.
That's correct.
Okay.
So the process is first to vote for the first person on the slate.
For the chairperson.
Yes, for the chairperson.
Okay.
And I'll just say, so the process that we had discussed at the ad hoc nominating committee is that we would do individual votes on chair, vice chair, and chair pro tem. The other nominations could be taken like a consent calendar slate, but anybody could pull any one of those to be discussed individually. And then just to remember that for the board chair, it requires a two-thirds vote of the board. So like that's all members, so it's a minimum of 10 votes. You can call for a weighted vote after a tally vote has been taken, and then it would be a weighted vote based on each city's weight. For all other positions, it's a majority, and it's a majority of the members present. So I was asked earlier today what if somebody abstained, and under when it's just a majority of the members present, if somebody, we don't have a rule at MTS about how abstentions are treated, so we defer to Robert's Rules of Order, and under Robert's Rules of Order, an abstention would be treated as if the person is absent, and then that would reduce potentially the number of votes needed to breach a majority. So,
okay.
Yeah, and today we have 14 members, so a majority would require, still would require 8 votes.
Okay, thank you. And before we go, with, I was remiss to introduce Patricia Aguilar. And as you know, under AB 805, the city of Chula Vista got a second seat at the table. No more votes, but a second seat at the table. And so Pat is the alternate to myself and Mike Diaz, Councilmember Mike Diaz, that could not be here today. But I just wanted everyone to meet Pat. She's an awesome lady. And in her last year of serving the city of Chula Vista, she's been on the city council for 7 years now. So, and she's done a great job, but I just wanted to introduce her. Okay. So is the motion to accept the nomination from the committee, is that the proper motion that we make?
No, there's no seconds that's required. So the way that it would go is that we would vote, once you've accepted any nominations from the floor, you would vote on the candidate in the order they were received. The ad hoc nominating committee's recommendations would be the first vote. So, and then if the recommendation of them didn't receive the required number of votes, you would go then to whoever was nominated from the floor in the order they were received.
Okay, all right. So at this time then, we'll call for nominations from the floor for the chair position. Okay, seeing none, we have one person. Yes, Mr. Cunningham.
Thank you. This is, thank you for all your hard work putting this slate together here. Being from the city of Poway, and I think I'm one of the longest members on the board here, getting close, not compared to the person to my left, and all that has gotten me is closer to the front here, but a better view than most of you, and I appreciate that. I just wanted a more editorial comment, and then I'll make my nomination from the floor. I haven't had the opportunity to work with Councilmember Gomez. I've seen you at work, and I appreciate everything you do. But what I've known, what I've learned over the 9 years that I've been here, is that stability, forthrightness, and the ability to have the historical knowledge of all that we have done here at MTS bodes well for leadership in terms of the chair. I was lucky enough to sit a few seats away from Harry, I think he did a wonderful job of being the steady sort of tiller at the boat, on the boat as we navigated through some extremely turbulent waters. When I first came on this board, we made the most dramatic cuts MPS has ever seen in terms of service and staff and the sacrifices made by many of the unions in terms of their pensions. And we were the first in the county to go to 401k plans with these folks chipping in. So we've been through some very difficult times. I think many of you may remember the taxicab debates that went on seemingly for months. You may remember the train to nowhere that we have been debating for a number of years. And all the while expanding service and maintaining one of the safest transit systems in the state, if not in the country, working on expanding services to UCSD and all the great things that MTS has done. And I think they've done it through a number of factors. One, our cities and county have said I believe, to be members from their council and from the board that have transit in their heart. I know many of us here use transit. I use it a couple of days a week. And many of us have it in our soul that it is an important service to our most needy community, but also our community at large. So from my sense, as I have navigated my way around this, and I apologize for my cold, around this dais here, I believe that it's very important for MTS at this juncture to have what I consider to be someone who's had a steady hand, excuse me, at the helm for, excuse me, I got to get rid of two things, this beard and this cold, right? Those are my two resolutions. And I don't know if this person's even going to accept the nomination, but I thought it was worthy to acknowledge this person, to say that I believe in my heart that this person would be an incredible chair. No disrespect to you, Councilmember Gomez. I just go by what I know and what I feel comfortable with and what I've seen time and time again. And for those reasons and many more, I move the nomination of Supervisor Roberts as chair of the MTS. Thank you.
Let me comment, please.
Yes.
Thank you. I didn't know where he was going, but first of all, Mary and I talked, excuse me, Mayor Salas and I talked after the nominating committee got together, and she explained to me what the thought was, wanting to have change, wanting to get women involved. Some of you might not have been here. We actually tried to get a woman involved years ago. It was Congressman Lynn Shank. We tried to get her as the chair's position, only to be fought by a then Congressman Bob Fellner, who didn't like former Congressman Lynn Shank. So we weren't able to do that, as Bob threatened the board and said, "I'll never support anything you want." I don't have a problem. I supported Lynn then, and I thought it was a good idea to get women involved, and I understand what the slate is, and I appreciate your effort. This is my last year, and I'm trying to cut back, and I appreciate your gesture, and I truly appreciate your comments, but I don't want to be a nomination today. And I think the slate that Mayor Salas has put forward will work fine.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. And indeed, I'm not really a good politician. I hadn't talked to anybody about this. but that's how we do it out in Poway. I just wanted to make sure that Mr. Roberts understood my appreciation for his efforts. And with your withdrawal, I will withdraw my motion from the floor. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Roberts, I think no one can understate the value and the experience that you have brought to MTS over the years, and truly an appreciation for that, not only on MTS, but on all the other regional boards that you served on. I think that you have really been what you call a leader in San Diego for many, many years, and no one should ever diminish what the work that you have done or your capabilities. I just did want to add something else in regards to the conversation that we had. It's not just that Georgette is a woman and we need to see women in office. It's that she's a very, very capable, a very strong, a very solid woman that has shown me, in not only her service here on MTS, but her participation in SANDAG, the depth of study that she puts into every single issue that's before, the quality of the questions that she asks and the answers that it elicits, that really serve to inform the whole entire board more because of the questions that she asked and the leadership that she's taken. Also, Mr. Cunningham, when you said we needed somebody that has transit in their heart, I have seen Georgette Gomez work on transit issues way before she was a councilwoman. She was, hold on, no comments, please, because I don't want to diminish anything that Georgia has accomplished in her time. She was at the very heart of the taxi cab discussions. She she is a person whose family still depends on transit as her primary means of transportation. And somebody that really understands the necessity of transit to so many people. We heard the woman that comes to us almost every week that under public comments, and you know we may diminish her her concerns because of her inability to effectively communicate. But nonetheless, those are the kinds of people that we have to pay attention to as members of this board and MTS, and then guaranteeing the true mission of MTS, which is providing top quality public transit to all. So I know that we had these discussions around the table in our nomination committee. Chairman Roberts, I'm so glad that you know you are giving are taking this opportunity to support somebody that not only will offer the diversity of gender, but also the potential of being a great chair of this organization. Thank you.
You're welcome. Do we take nominations one at a time here, or if there's, we can close nominations?
So we can close the nominations, and then we would need to take public comment before the board takes any action.
Okay.
So we will close public comment now?
No, public. Close the nomination.
Close the nomination process and then allow the public comment before the vote. Okay, so we'll move to close the nomination. Okay.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to close the nominations. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we'll deem that to be unanimously approved. We'll do the public comment and then we'll go to a vote on the motion. Okay? Okay, the first, I have seven speakers, the first of whom is Michelle Krug. Yeah. And each speaker will have 2 minutes on this item.
I will not belabor this, as there is only one candidate, and that is who I was going to speak for. I'm going to speak for. I have watched, as Mary mentioned, I have watched for decades Georgia working in our community for public transportation, for environmental equity, et cetera, et cetera. So I am going to be very happy when this election is done, because I do believe that this will put a different perspective, an added perspective to MTS of regular people that, as Mary said, are dependent on your system. You have, I just am grateful, and I am knowledgeable about how much my life is affected by the policies that come out of this board. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. The next speaker will be Jacqueline Reynoso. She'll be followed by Gretchen Newsom.
Good morning, members of the MTS board and members of the public. My name is Jacqueline Reynoso, president and CEO of the National City Chamber of Commerce. I will read very quickly because I was told at check-in that I had 3 minutes and now I know I have two. For the record, I'm here to personally speak in support of Mona Rio's election as vice chair of the board of the Metropolitan Transit System. Mona's service on the MTS board since 2011 and her leadership on the Public Safety Committee speak to her working knowledge and commitment to the agency's critical role in responsible planning. She has been able to balance the agency's fiscal sustainability with effective transportation networks and delivery of services to improve the quality of life in our entire region. Mona is a respected leader in our region and would serve as an asset to the MTS Executive Committee. She is valued for her ability to think critically, listen actively to diverse stakeholders, and advocate strongly, as evidenced through her role on SANDAG's Audit, Oversight, and Executive Committee, and as well on the Los Angeles-San Diego Rail Corridor Agency. Mona understands the importance of transit's role in economic development when it comes to goods movement, easing congestion on the freeway, and connecting residents to jobs. She represents our National City community with integrity and strategic foresight, understanding the tremendous impact of public transportation in the lives of residents that represent the highest ridership per capita in the entire county. I have known Mona for over 10 years through her partnership with the National City Chamber of Commerce and have witnessed her unwavering commitment to protect our economic vitality of not only the city, but the region. She is a pragmatic leader that represents the interest of the South Bay, the fastest growing demographic in the county. In closing, I believe that it is in the best interest of our region to nominate Mona Rios as vice chair of the MTS board for her balanced approach to ensure an optimal public transit system. Thank you.
Thank you. Gretchen. No. I'm going to go through all of the public comment right now, the seven people that submitted the speaker's request.
Thank you.
So Gretchen Newsom will be followed by Randy Van Fleck.
Perfect. Gretchen Newsom on behalf of IBW 569 and our 3,400 electrical workers, the Electricians Union, and we're also a member of the Quality of Life Coalition. It is our hope today that the board will vote for both Councilmember Georgette Gomez as the new MTS chair. Congratulations, I think, are almost in order. And also Councilmember Mona Rios as the new vice chair. Both women have demonstrated successful leadership in addressing climate change and investing in good middle-class jobs with a true commitment to expand mass transit. And both have long histories and strong skill sets of advocacy and action for mass transit. And both are highly skilled in collaborating and representing our communities and our needs. Both council members Georgette Gomez and Mona Rios are poised and professional and committed to their public service duties, and both are strong advocates for a robust transit system and for our economy, environment, communities, and working families. I urge you to vote for both council members Georgette Gomez as chair and Mona Rios as vice chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Randy is going to be followed by Anastasia Brewster.
Thank you for your time this morning. My name is Randy Van Vleck. I'm the Transportation Planning Manager with the City Heights Community Development Corporation. This next year is big for Mid-City. February 24th, we're really excited to celebrate the opening of the long-awaited centerline stations that are gonna serve the Rapid 235 multi-decade initiative. We also have really exciting improvements that are gonna be rolling out through the Transit Optimization Plan. And this time next year, the bus on shoulder pilot on the 94 and the 805 will be rolling out as well. These improvements are evidence of the incredible potential of agency, stakeholder, and community collaboration and partnership. And the role that those elements play in transforming our transportation system in a way that prioritizes transit. Having worked for a community-based organization for 10 years, being elected and now serving as District 9 representative of the City Council, Councilmember Georgette Gomez recognizes that incredible potential. When Ms. Gomez was with the Environmental Health Coalition, I had the pleasure of working with her closely, and I recognized it was very evident that she is one of the most hardest working people, most talented people I've had the honor to work with. And growing up in Embodio Logan and being elected in D9, working in National City and serving our border communities, Georgette really understands the communities that ride transit the most. And for those reasons, City Heights Community Development Corporation is honored to support her in this bid. And finally, as someone who grew up in South Bay, I'm really excited to see this slate. Particularly really happy to see Councilmember Mona Rios move forward as vice chair. She has brought passion, soul, and a great deal of intelligence to our transit planning, and I've had the honor to work with her. So encourage you to approve the ad hoc nominating committee proposals before you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Randy. Next speaker, Anastasia, is gonna be followed by Anna Reynoso.
Good morning, my name is Anastasia Brewster. I'm a resident of D9. I've lived for the last 11 years in City Heights, where I've worked with my neighbors to make our community healthier and safer. And transit is one of the most important pieces of that puzzle. And so I'm here to wholeheartedly express my support for the nomination of Councilmember Georgette Gomez, my council district representative, and also Councilmember Mona Rios to become our chair and vice chair of the MTS board. I was drinking my coffee this morning. I was just super excited to come here and just unequivocally be able to support these two women leaders because of their integrity, because they understand the needs of transit users. They understand the need for substantive community participation in making these decisions to make MTS continue to serve our entire region. AB 805 demonstrates that voters are ready for change, and these two women represent that change. I'm the mom of two girls, one who's a daily bus rider and the other one who maybe as she gets older. And as we continue to plan for our region and our own children, I am very confident that these women's leadership abilities that they've demonstrated here at this board and in their communities will serve us well. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Ana Reynoso, and I'm here on behalf of the Environmental Health Coalition. As an organization, we represent over 6,000 members who are dedicated to realizing environmental justice throughout San Diego County. Today, we are here to support the Ad Hoc Nominating Committee's proposal to elect Georgette Gomez as chair and Mona Rios as vice chair of the MTS board. Equitable, efficient, and affordable transportation planning is especially important for historically disadvantaged communities. Low-income residents of color are most likely to use public transit, and therefore they are the most severely impacted by inadequate planning. In San Diego, low-income communities of color have suffered for decades at the hands of SANDAG's siloed focus on freeway expansion and other inequitable transportation planning strategies. Because of this, 70% of jobs in San Diego County are inaccessible by public transit, forcing many low-income residents to take on the expensive burden of purchasing and maintaining a vehicle. This car-centric planning has also resulted in increased health impacts for many residents, and these higher rates of exposure to traffic pollution lead to more asthma attacks and to higher risks of chronic diseases. These problems have resulted largely because of lack of community representation at SANDAG and at MTS. The leaders who construct and guide San Diego's transportation planning are not typically members of the most marginalized communities in the county. With AB 805, we have begun to realize a solution to this problem. And today, you have the opportunity to push this progress forward by electing Council Members Gomez and Rios to MTS Chair and Vice Chair, respectively. The importance of real community representation cannot be understated. Both Council Members Gomez and Rios have demonstrated their dedication to centering community needs and wants. And so EHC is here to support Council Members Gomez and Rios. Unequivocally, they are the best for this position. Thank you.
Buenos días, en general. Mi nombre es Esperanza González Miranda. Soy residente de City Heights y soy promotora de EHC.
Good morning. My name is Esperanza Miranda. I live in City Heights and I'm promoter of EHC.
Tengo mucho tiempo viviendo y caminando por el área de City Heights y no he visto mucho cambio, sobre todo en el transporte público. Es importante para las comunidades de color y bajos ingresos que nuestros líderes nos representen. En realidad, al demostrar una preocupación por el medio ambiente y transporte público.
I have a long time lived in and walked around City Heights, and I've seen a lot of change, especially in public transit. It's important for communities of color and low income that our leaders represent us and demonstrate a concern for the environment and public transit.
El problema en mi comunidad es que no ha habido muchos líderes en MPS y SANDA que se enfoquen en las comunidades de color y bajos ingresos. El sistema de transporte en San Diego es costoso y limitado. He visto el crecimiento de la población y la contaminación. Esto afecta a comunidades.
The problem with my community is that there hasn't been much change with the leaders of MTS and SANDAG that focus on the communities of color and low income. The transportation system in San Diego is costly and limited. I've seen an increase in population and pollution with this affects the communities like City Heights that have a number of highways going through its streets. Unfortunately, until now, SANDAG has had all the control over transit planning, including MTS. SANDAG has not done much for its communities.
Para nosotros, la solución es elegir a la señora Gómez para presidente y señora Ríos como vicepresidente. Con la aprobación del AB 805, tenemos la oportunidad de cambiar este sistema. Para lograr los objetivos de AB 805, necesitamos nuevos líderes.
The solution is to elect Ms. Gomez for president and Ms. Rios as vice president. With the approval of AB 805, we have an opportunity to change the system To reach the objectives of AB 805, we needed new leaders.
Yo he trabajado con la señora Gómez y conozco su habilidad como líder. La señora Gómez sabe cómo viven las personas en comunidades necesitadas. Ella sabe cómo vive la gente que toma el transporte público. Es una líder que ha hecho lo que se propone. Ella es una persona elegible para presidente de MTS.
I have worked with Ms. Gomez and I'm familiar with her ability to lead. Ms. Gomez knows how the people in the communities are currently living. She knows how the people in this community take public transit, and she's a leader that knows what she wants to propose. She's a person that's eligible to be president of MTS.
A nombre de las comunidades de color y bajos ingresos, me gustaría que eligieran a la señora Gomez y señora Ríos para presidente y vicepresidente de la mesa de MTS. Gracias por escucharme. Vuelvo a repetirles que la señora Gómez y señora Ríos, me gustaría que las eligieran.
In the name of the communities of color and low income, I would like to elect Ms. Gomez and Ms. Ríos for president and vice president of the board of MTS. Thanks for listening, and I want to repeat again, we should elect Ms. Gomez and Ms. Ríos.
Okay, that's the final public speaker now, conferring with our attorneys until we could do first, if there's no further nominations, and I should make clear, if there's no further nominations from the floor, we can do the chair position, we can have a vote on that, and then we could take all of the others as a single vote, but we have to separate out the chair's vote.
Okay, so the nominations were closed from the floor, so that's correct. Ready to call the vote. So those in favor of Georgette Gomez?
I wish to speak, actually.
Oh, sure.
If I may. Thank you. I want to, first of all, thank the public who is here to speak on this very important item. It'll determine really the future of public transportation in San Diego. The new leader of MTS will determine which direction we go in and how we focus in providing important transit services to our community. So I want to thank you all for being here and speaking the voice of the community. I want to just take a moment to speak on behalf of Georgette and in support of Georgette. I appreciate the words that were said previously, especially by Mayor Salas about Georgette. And this was not a decision for me that was difficult at all. Georgette is someone that that I know, that I've known for some time, but it wasn't easy because of that. It was easy because I know who she is as an individual, as a person, and her character. And I know that she truly believes that this organization can do a lot better. We know we can, whether it's for our workers, thank you all for what you do and for being here today, for our riders, for our citizens, or for our communities at large. She will keep those interests always at heart. She's not someone who is going to go out and cut a deal to make something happen, as we've seen too often happen, both at SANDAG and I think here at MTS. She's one who's going to take the interest of the public first, and she's going to base those decisions that she makes on that. I'm in my last year of service this year, and it really is unfortunate for me that I know now that Georgette will be leading this organization over at least the next several years. Unfortunately, that I can't be here to be part of what I think will be amazing, tremendous change in a new direction for our transit system in San Diego. Georgette, I just want to say to you personally, I'm really proud of you. This is a great day for San Diego. I'm so glad to be able to be here. And if I would be able to make a nomination or a motion, I would. You are going to make us really proud, and I'm going to be looking from away to all the great things you'll do. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of our community standing here with you, and I can't wait to have you sitting up there as chair of this committee.
Thank you, Mayor Faulkner.
thank you. Good morning. Happy to lend my strong support for my colleague Georgette Gomez as chair, and would agree with a lot of the comments that have, all of the comments that have just been made, and thank you, many members of the public. You came down as well, and my colleague, Councilmember Alvarez. I think Councilmember Gomez is going to bring a tremendously positive perspective to the continued changes at MTS. Her fighting and as an advocate for increased public transit options and looking at different ways to do things, looking at ways to improve on what's already been done. I think that's why she wants to be chair, and she and I have had those discussions. So I think she is the right person at the right time. I want you to know you have my full confidence, and I would urge a unanimous vote of support for Georgette Gomez as chair.
Thank you very much, Mayor Faulkner. Council President Cole.
Thank you, Mayor Salas. Again, I support and agree with everything that has been said by Councilmember Alvarez, our mayor, because I also too work with Councilmember Gomez on the city council, and every item, I mean, she's passionate about almost every item that comes before city council because, you know, she wants to make a difference in the city of San Diego, especially in her district. We both have diverse districts, and they've been underserved, especially mine, for too long. And now I can see that they're going to be prosperous. They're going to be successful. With your passion, with your commitment, you're going to be a great chair, and I appreciate you stepping up because, you know, you work hard at city council, and this is an extra load, but you will tackle it. You will be successful. And also, too, I've worked with County Supervisor Ron Roberts since what? Since you've been on city council. I was on the floor with you. So thank you for your service and everything that you've done throughout your tenure. But again, I support 100% our next chair, and that's Georgette Gomez. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez.
Wow, I'm lost with words. I actually have a five-page, which I will not read. I'll spare you.
Do you want to save it till after the vote?
Yeah. No, I just want to stress. I want to just take a few moments to really thank the nominating committee for trusting in me and proposing, putting my name as the chair. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That's all.
Thank you. If no one else wants to speak, Mayor,
no.
Vice Chair Roberts.
Yeah, I think we can take a, as I suggest, a motion for the chair position.
I think it's closed.
Yes.
Oh, it's closed.
Call for the vote.
So we don't need a motion then. Okay, so we can vote on the chair's position. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we'll deem that to be unanimously approved. Congratulations, Georgette. Now, all of the nominations were closed, so the...
I don't think we specifically asked if there were any alternate nominations for the rest of the slate, so we may just want to clarify.
Okay, just so we can make sure that we're not missing something. Are there any alternate nominations for any of those remaining? I presume that includes committee appointments.
Yeah,
also.
So it'd be vice chair, chair pro tem, and then all of the other committee assignments.
Okay. This is your moment. Okay, hearing none, then it'd be appropriate to have a motion to close those.
Yes.
Okay, we'll close all, a motion to close all of the remaining. Moved by Councilman Alvarez, second by Councilman McWhorter. Okay, if there's no further comment, we can vote on then the remaining positions. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? In hearing none, we'll deem that to be unanimously approved, and that completes item number four. As promised, we're going to do the consent calendar. We'll move then into closed session, and we come out, Councilmember Gomez will take over the chair. Okay? The consent calendar consisting of items 6 through 20. Are there any of those that any of the members are requesting that be pulled? Why don't we wait a second and we'll...
questions, but I think we
okay.
So I would just proceed with the last call.
Okay. Is there anyone desirous of pulling any of the consent calendar items? Councilmember Evelers?
I move the consent. I just have a question on item number 20. Item number 20 is the only one I have a question on.
Sure.
Maybe move 1 through 9, or 6, 7 through 19, I believe.
If you have a quick question, you want to ask the question,
question,
we can leave it on the consent.
Okay. We don't actually have the contract in the backup, unless it's this one page. Or I was curious if any of the contract includes any percentage of the work being done for advertisement of public service announcements or anything like that.
Public service announcements are included. They do represent all the, well, they represent MTS, but they entertain offers from all kinds of agencies that have public service announcements. So typically there's money received for those.
Does MTS have access to some public service announcement advertisement at their request? Or is it just public service announcements that an agency pays for?
Generally, they are paid for.
Okay. So none that MTS has direct like requests about something that's important to us that we want to announce that isn't covered by this contract.
Correct.
We have space if we want to promote MTS, and that's generally interior stuff, right?
That's all in the interior, but this is all
correct.
Exterior.
Generally, right. The public service stuff is all interior.
Okay.
Right. And that's actually very effective for public service.
All right. Thank you. I move the consent items.
Okay. There's a motion to approve the consent calendar. Second by Councilmember Sankey. Is there any further discussion on this? If not, all in favor of approving the consent calendar consisting of items actually 7 through 20, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? God, you're a good group this morning. Everything's approved. We'll go into a closed session for those reports. Thank you.
I'm just going to report out of closed session while everyone's settling down. On item number 24A,
please, we're back in session. Thank you.
On item number 24A, closed session performance evaluation and conference with labor negotiators regarding the CEO, the board received a report, conducted a performance evaluation, and gave instructions to negotiators. On item number 24B, closed session conference with labor negotiators pursuant to the Public Transit Employees Association, the board approved a new labor agreement on a vote of with 12 in favor, 1 opposed and 2 absent. And item number 24C, the board approved a new labor agreement with the Transit Enforcement Officers Association with 13 in favor and 2 absent.
Thank you, Council, for the report. We're going to move to item 30. And due to the time constraints, we are going to be deferring item 46 to next month, and we're going to move on to item 30 for now.
Great. Thank you, and good morning. Once again, we are here to talk through the results of the San Diego Transit pension plan. The investment results will be item 30, and I have Jeremy Miller here to discuss that. And then item 31 will be the resulting actuarial valuation. Ann Harper and Alice Alsberg are here to discuss the resulting actuarial valuation. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Jeremy, and we'll talk about the investment results for fiscal year 2017.
Great. Thank you, Larry. And hello, everyone. I'm on. Thank you. Hello, everyone. So we have on the screen here some of the slides from our presentation. I'll keep my comments fairly brief, but happy to answer any questions along the way or at the end. Beginning on slide two, we'll look at the investment structure as of fiscal year end, 6/30/2017. You can see in the table that the assets are diversified across an array of five different broad asset class categories on the far left, including equity, fixed income, real return, and absolute return. You can see as of fiscal year end, market portfolio totaled $162 million, and you can see how those asset classes are broken across by dollar as well as percentages. The goal of this investment structure is, of course, to maximize the return of the portfolio, while also assuming a prudent level of risk. So we, of course, want to make sure that the assets and its investment structure are tied to the liabilities because, of course, the assets exist to satisfy the liabilities. So we want to make sure that we have a structure that aligns with a closed plan, and this will, of course, affect our risk approach, particularly our liquidity profile. So given that, you can given the liability structure that we have a fairly diversified and highly liquid portfolio that's less dependent on its equity position. On the next slide, we have a further breakdown, give some details from that investment structure. So you can see at the top still that same portfolio value, $162 million, and below that lists all the different managers and strategies. So that money is spread across 12 different products, which helps provide diversification as well at the product and strategy level. And we control the concentration of each of those positions, particularly the active managers, to ensure we do not have any concentration risk. So those two slides look at the high-level structure and the details. The next slide looks at the performance for fiscal year 2017. You can see in this table, we started the year at $153.6 million, had about $4 million in net outflow for benefit payments and such, investment gain of about $12.5 million, and that brings you to your ending value for the year, $162 million, translates to a return of 8.15%. Your actuary rate of return, which the actuaries will talk about in a little bit, is targeted at 7, so it's above the actuarial rate for the year. On the next slide, we get into some more detail of that performance. It takes that top-line total portfolio return of 8.15% for the year and then breaks it out across the various asset classes. And hopefully what we see here is some improved investment performance relative to last year, which of course we like, a return above the actuarial assumed rate, which of course is positive news, and we think also a portfolio that is positioned well going forward given planned dynamics related to liabilities and demographics. And on the following slide, we get a sneak peek at where things are going in fiscal year 2018, and it continues to be good news. As of November, the portfolio is up 5.07% thus far in fiscal year 2018. Those are the numbers we had when this report came out. We have preliminary December numbers, which would increase that to roughly 6.4%, and January's been better. So your number should already be well above your actuarial rate of return. So more good news in fiscal year 2018. So I'll stop there and see if there are any questions.
Are there any questions from board members? All right. Is there anything else from staff?
And that was just informational only, and so item 31 will be the actuarial evaluation.
All right, so thank you so much. We're going to move on to item 31.
Hello, and thank you for having us. Myself and Alice are going to be discussing the retirement plans of the San Diego Transit Corporations today and the actual evaluation for July 1st, 2017. First, we're going to take a look at where the plan status is today and the changes from the previous year. Then we're going to take a historical look at the plan and where the plan has been. And then lastly, we're going to look at and discuss some projections of the contributions and the funded status of the plan and show that the funding policy that the board adopted back in 2012 is still working and on track. So the contribution increased from last year to this year to 15.1 to 15.6 million. And so it's about a $500,000 increase, which is primarily due to the actuarial investment experience. So even though the plan earned 8% in the fiscal year, which is over the actuarial assumed rate of return of 7%, we don't recognize gains and losses on assets immediately. They're smoothed in over a five-year period, and this is to help manage contribution volatility. So some of the losses that we had back in 2015 and 16, we're still recognizing those, and the current year gain, we're not recognizing all of it, we're only recognizing 20% of it. So that's the reason we have a increase in the contribution because of asset experience. There was also $150,000 decrease in the contribution rate due to fewer active members earning benefits. So since this is a closed plan, when members retire or terminate, they are not replaced by new hires because the new hires go into your defined contribution plan. So every year you're going to see a little decrease in the contribution because of that dynamic. There was also a slight increase of $170,000 due to salary experience. There was a little bit more overtime was earned than we had anticipated. This pie chart shows how your $15.6 million contribution is split between its components. There are three components, the normal cost, the UAL payment, and your administrative expenses. The normal cost is about a quarter of the contribution, and that is the cost of active members earning their benefit for the current year. So the plan every year pays for those benefits that are accruing in the year that they're earned. So if all actuarial assumptions had been met since the plan's inception, your contribution would be only $4 million, the 3.7 for normal cost and the 0.3 for the administrative expenses. But since that hasn't happened and over the years there have been investment losses, people are living longer, your unfunded accrued liability has built up to about $125 million. So that UAL payment of $11.6 million is like a mortgage payment, and it's paying down that unfunded over 25 years, and that 25 years was starting back in 2012. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Alice to talk about the plan's history.
So we'll have a look at a few key factors, a few key slides that take a look at the history of the plan, some of the results that we've seen. In terms of the contribution, Ann went through the contribution for 2017. At the 15.6 million. And we see in this 10-year snapshot that 15.6 million does look largely different from 2008 when the contribution was at 5.3 million. Now there are a couple of events that occurred in this time that led to that increase in contribution. First and foremost, in 2008, there was the big market crash. And with that crash, the drop in assets led to an unfunded liability that needed to be accounted for and paid for through contribution payments. And then moving along to 2016, we see another jump in that contribution, and it's denoted by the blue shaded area. And that was last year we had the experience study, And whenever we do an experience study, we see if the assumptions that are being used to value the liabilities of the plan are still accurate. And there was a big change to the mortality assumption, which increased the liabilities. And then there was also a change to the discount rate. So the rate of return that's assumed for the plan went from 7.5% to 7%. And those two changes increased the liability of the plan, which in turn increased the contribution to be made on an annual basis. Here we see the historical funded ratio of the plan. And by funded ratio, we mean how much assets do we have to total liability. So in this graph, the assets are represented by the gold bars. So those are the assets to the pension plan. And the gray shaded area is the unfunded. So that means that the top of the lines, the top of these bars is the total liability to date of the plan. And in 2008, that gray area was smaller. It was, there was a smaller unfunded portion, and the plan was 84.2% funded. And we see two notable drops in this picture when we're looking at the line, which represents the funded ratio. So there was the drop in 2008 to 2009 with the market crash. Then there was a steady rate of funded ratio up until 2016 with the change in assumptions, so both economic and demographic assumptions, which again decreased that funded ratio of the plan. So right now in 2017, the funded ratio is 58.1%. So in other terms, that means there's 58 cents in assets to every dollar of liability that's been earned in benefits. Here we'll also look at the membership of the plan. The gold bars are the active member counts. The gray bars are the terminated vested, so those who are no longer working and will be receiving a benefit in the future. And then the blue section of bars is those who are currently collecting benefits. So retirees, beneficiaries, disabled who are collecting benefits, there's the head count. And the biggest takeaway from this slide is when the plan closed from 2008 to 2012, when the plan was open, there was a pretty steady population in terms of the split between the statuses of the members. But slowly, and we're going to see this continue, the gold bars from 2012 to 2017 are decreasing. So the active population, as they retire and move into the inactive status, they're not being replaced by more actives in this defined benefit plan. They're now part of the defined contribution plan. Here we see the plan composition. The top two pie charts are showing headcounts. So it's just a different view of the headcount of the breakdown of the population that we saw on the previous slide. But the bottom two pie charts are showing us what is that count? How does that count translate to liability of the plan? So what we see here in 2017, that again, the inactive population carries the majority of the liability of the plan. So in 2017, we see that 64% of the liability is to retirees that are active, currently collecting a benefit. And the comparison that's being made from 2007 to 2017, that shows how the plan matures over time. And so as a plan progresses, as it naturally does, you do have fewer actives in proportion to retirees. And so you could see the move from 50% of the blue shaded area in 2007 compared to 2017, where it's now at 64%.
So now we're going to take a look at what the future looks like in our projections of the contributions. And want to caveat that as much as we like to think so, we don't have a crystal ball looking into the future. And these projections are based on our actuarial assumptions. And based on the fact that these assumptions, all of them, will be met each and every year going forward, which we know clearly is not going to happen, but it's going to give you a picture of what your funding policy is doing and what it looks like if all assumptions were being met. The actual experience
of the plan, particularly the investment experience, is really what's going to drive your contributions and your funded status. So this graph shows a very similar picture to what it looked like back in 2012 when the board closed the pension plan and determined their funding policy. And it looks very similar in that in 2037, that UAL payment or that UAL unfunded accrued liability will be paid off. And all that will be left is the cost of the employees who are still there earning benefits. So it, again, this just shows that your funding plan is, or your funding policy is working. In the short term, the contribution is expected to increase over the next 3 years as some of those deferred asset losses are recognized. But then after that, the plan contribution is going to gradually decrease as there are less actives earning benefits. It's that one quarter of that pie that I showed you earlier, that slice is going to get smaller and smaller. This chart shows the projected funded ratio. The assets are the lines, and then the liabilities are the gray bars. And currently, the funded ratio at 58% is going to remain relatively constant over the next few years. And then as the UAL is slowly being paid off, you see that the funded ratio gradually increases every year. And what's interesting about this graph opposed to some other pension plans is that since the plan is closed, those bars actually reach a peak in about 2025, and then you see that, which are the liabilities, and then you see them slowly decreasing over time as your liabilities will actually decrease. And the funding target is 100% for your pension plan, and that will be reached in 2037 when that unfunded accrued liability is paid off. And again, these are all just estimates again. That's what we're hoping and expecting will happen. But again, the actual experience is what's going to drive that, these numbers. So finally, the takeaway here is that year over year, the contribution increased about 3%. And you're going to see that continually increase the next couple years, but then the contribution is going to slowly start declining, and then in 2037 it will be down to about $1 million. The funded ratio remains stable, and again, we're targeting that to be 100% in 2037. And the active population, it continues to decline and get older given the closed nature of the plan. And again, the takeaway is that actual experience of your plan is going to drive your actual cost. So that's all we have. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. So with that, there is a recommendation from staff, but I'll open it up right now to the board members for questions or comments, if there are any. David?
Thank you for the presentation. I'm curious about your slide, the one with the bar that you referenced, the 2012 assumptions, and how you mentioned that it was similar, that the bar graph, yeah, was similar. This one with the current figures was similar to the 2012 assumptions. I'm assuming it's all the factors. If the mortality change, which was a change at the city, was the same thing with SDSERS, that's one of the biggest impact to the assumptions and why the increase in contributions. But if that's changed, how is 2037 still remain relatively close to what it was in 2012? Is that due to the returns? Especially, it sounded like this last year, in the previous presentation, the returns were above the 7% assumed to eight something, I guess.
Right. So the biggest reason this picture looks similar is that the big piece of the UAL back in 2013 is being paid off over 25 years. So you have that dynamic. And now currently all gains and losses that arise are being paid over 15 years. So So those losses will be paid prior to 2037. So really, it's the big picture trend that's staying the same. The actual contribution is higher than it was back in 2012.
Right.
But the dynamic, like the big picture trend is similar, where you're going to see the big cliff or the big drop in the contribution in 2037. That's when I say the picture looks the same.
Oh, I see.
Big picture.
Okay. So the structure of the graph looks the same. Right. So over a 25-year period, we have a liability that needs to be paid off. So regardless, by 2037, those liabilities will be paid off by 2037, which will bring you down to your just at that point your normal cost, which at that point will be about one.
So I wasn't here in 2012, so the question I'm asking, so we committed to the 25-year payoff in 2037, which means depending on the market, depending on whether the assumed rate of return gets lowered by as a result of actions taken, or if the mortality rates change, or whatever, any number of factors, whatever happens, these numbers could all grow with those changes, but the commitment remains for 2037.
Yeah, and one point to note on that, when the assumption changes were made, the payment period that was assigned aligned exactly, it was set to the same remaining years as that initial UAL, and so it didn't extend the term. So some systems, right, you'll see assumption changes amortized over 30 right. years or 25 years.
Right.
So rather than choosing a longer period, these assumptions were actually set to maintain that initial plan that was set in 2012, aligning with, I think, so last year it was 22 years, now 21 years remaining.
And that was the decision by the board, recommended by
yes.
you all? Or okay.
Yes.
All right. Are there any other... like nothing's for certain, but any potential big impacts to the either the percentage as a result of changes being made? What can we potentially expect? Anything that we should be? I mean, the market is always unknown. But are there any conversations happening around rate of return? Anything like that?
Well, we made a decision 2 years ago to reduce the rate of return from 7.5% to 7% to be a little bit more conservative based upon what we're seeing in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. You know, the factors are really investment return, which we smooth out over 5 years to reduce volatility within the contribution plan, and mortality, how long people live. And with this last actuarial experience study, not only did we look at how long people are living today, but how those mortality changes over time, and people 10 years from now will live even longer. So that was taken into account within that study to incorporate within this plan.
What about the salaries of the employee group that meets, that is in this benefit, and the assumptions on that? What was that? How was that calculated?
It was incorporated. I believe it was 2.5% to 3%.
Right, and we looked at the recent experience of the plan and updated it based on what we saw. I don't believe there was many change. There were significant changes to the salary scale that we were using. Okay. It was very minimal impact. But we looked at that. We looked at retirements and terminations. We looked at all of the different factors that go into or that could impact a pension plan.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Any other board members' questions? So with that, I'm going to call for a motion on the recommendation.
I'd move approval of the recommendation, the 15.6 plus million contribution.
Thank you, Ron. Is there a second? Thank you, Mona. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Motion moves. Thank you. So good. Okay, so we're going to move on to item 32. I'll ask staff to introduce this item. This is our state legislative program.
Okay, so good morning. I will be very brief. In your packet and in attachments A and B, you will see the federal and state legislative programs for calendar year 2018. Every year, we just kind of adapt it based on what circumstances are going on in that year. So you'll see that it's underlined cross out. Those are the changes that we're proposing for this year. So I'll focus a little bit on the priorities, and then I'm here to answer questions on any aspects of the legislative program. So under federal legislative priorities, a new infrastructure funding program is being talked about currently. We haven't seen what that's going to look like yet. Our lobbyist is actively, you know, trying to find out how that will impact transit. So one of the things we'll be doing is focusing on that program to see if we can get the maximum amount of return on that for our agency. Another thing that's being talked about is taking the discretionary grant programs and giving them back to the Congress members themselves for congressional earmarks. So we will be looking at that. Typically, we've always tried to achieve some kind of funding either through the administration under the discretionary grant programs or under congressional earmarks. And so the things that we've always prioritized are bus replacements, the fare collection system, which we're trying to update in the next couple of years, and we're currently under a procurement process for that. And then the board has indicated that a priority should be zero emission buses with the electrification infrastructure needed to make that work. The other thing we'll be looking for is helping our leaseholder for the freight railroad that crosses the border to achieve some kind of agreement with CBP so that they can cross into Mexico with their freight trains. And then finally, we're also going to be supporting SANDAG. Last year, they were disappointed in the amount of appropriations they received as part of their Midcoast full funding grant agreement. We would like to see that increase to the levels that most of the other agencies have been achieving, and so we'll be supporting them in their advocacy efforts in Washington. From the state perspective, we will be looking to maximize what we can get from the cap and trade, SB1, and CARB programs that are offering funding for various cap and trade related priorities. And again, we'll be prioritizing zero emission buses as one of our major asks in this year. We'll be also supporting housing legislation that makes TOD easier and more effective. This has been an emphasis at the state level for several years, and in fact, there's already been some pieces of legislation introduced this year that we will be monitoring in order to make it easier and more effective types of transit-oriented development. And then finally, we'll continue to assist CARB in crafting the innovative clean transit program. This used to be called the Advanced Clean Transit Program. They changed it to Innovative this most recent go-around. But this is dealing with the electrification of buses and vehicles through the transit programs. So with that, I will the board is asked to approve staff recommendations for the two slates of the federal and state program. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Sharon. Are there any board members' comments or questions in the rest of this item? Okay. There is a public comment on the item. No, yeah. So before we do a motion, just opening up for any questions. I do have a question since I don't see any of my colleagues. Under the climate change section on the handout that was given to us, there were a couple of references that I just wanted clarification of what we mean by it. One was on the third bullet, the second half of that bullet, which is to oppose efforts to impose the purchase of specific technology that would have adverse impacts on MTS ability to provide adequate levels of transit service. What do we mean by that? And what do we mean by adverse? How do we define that?
Yes, so one of the things that we've always been advocating is that we don't want to see anything coming out of the CARB Advanced Clean Transit Program that would require us to cut service in order to fund it. So what we would want to make sure is that if they are going to have mandates, that there'd be funding available for that. And if they are going to do it, that they have a complete understanding of how expensive these programs will be. There's also that we wouldn't want to see them to say, you must get inline charging stations, or you have to go with wave technology, or you have to do fuel cell buses and things like that. So what we're trying to say is that while we're going to continue to work with CARB on this, we want to make sure that the financial impacts to the transit system are not such that we're going to have to come to you and ask to cut service in order to pay for them.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then just overall, under AB 32 and SB 375, related to public transit, I know that we're not, as an agency, we're not required to reduce emissions by a certain percentage, but understand that transit is a major component of emission reductions. The cities have a responsibility. We're being asked to have CAPS, climate action plans, and all of that should be, there is a little bit of a link to MTS. The way that I was reading a lot of our efforts at the legislative was kind of opposing some of those efforts. So I just wanted to make sure that I'm reading this wrongly.
So again, it all relates to funding. Mm-hmm. So if you notice it mentions unfunded mandates. The concern would be that if there is a program set in place with certain goals and things that we would have to do, that if there's no funding for it, then again, it gets back to we'll have to cut service or raise fares to fund it. So that's really where that was going. In the past, we've advocated for favorable implementation of AB 32. That's kind of the reason I'm suggesting taking it out is because it's kind of that ship has sailed and right. We're kind of already moved on to the next, you know, goals and objectives. And certainly SB 375 does apply to us in that we can't put things into the planning at SANDAG that don't meet those goals. Okay. So there is a lot of that. Even when we applied for our TIRCP program of projects, they have to certify that we're in compliance with the regional goals for that. So in a nutshell, we can't impact that at this point,
mm-hmm.
because it is given to the municipalities and the regions to work towards those ends.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I get that some of the impacts that are being directed by the state might have a negative financial impact to the public transit system, but if the local jurisdictions are obligated and we are very much dependent on public transit to reduce those emissions, that we're not working against each other. So I don't want to say
no, certainly not. And in fact, when SB 375 was even being legislated, we were right there with our, you know, colleagues in the California Transit Association advocating on behalf of transit has a place at the table. We are probably your number one way to reduce, the use of private automobiles, et cetera, and that we should be right front and center in the plans that are going to be adapted to achieve SB 375 goals.
Okay, so. Thank you. And then just lastly, I actually wanted to add one item to our legislative platform, which is to support programs that would provide incentives to local transit agencies towards funding towards student transit passes. And I know that in previous years, there was a bill that took away money from operations. I'm hearing that there will be another bill introduced that is not going to do that, that they're looking at funding differently. So I would want us to be, if it benefits us, to support that, the pool of youth bus passes to support it.
Okay.
Thank you. So with that, it's a public comment. So there is one public comment by Max Elorin from MidCityCam. Yep. You will have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, everybody. So my name is Max, and I'm representing MidCityCan. I'm the community organizer for improving transportation in City Heights, and I'm here to ask that you add language to the 2018 state and federal legislative programs to add to support legislation for new funding for youth bus passes, or support any legislation that wants to provide free to no-cost bus passes for youth. You know, as a community organizer in our group and our team, I see students struggling. They have to use their actual financial aid to pay for their bus passes, so that's about $530 a month that could, or a year, that could be used for books, technology, things for them to succeed in school. We definitely want to, you know, increase ridership, so we feel like these bus passes would help with that. This way, you know, we'll lower greenhouse gas emissions, and, you know, the earlier students start riding transit, then, you know, they're more likely to continue into their adulthood. And last thing is, you know, mobility means opportunity. So the more transit options that we have, it would definitely help the sort of diverse population that we have in City Heights. So last year, AB 17 was vetoed by the governor. And if you look at his veto message, it said we need to look at existing programs for free bus passes. And the key word there is programs. I don't know if you sort of noticed, but you know, there's this overarching theme that rich people get policies and poor people get programs. So we want to sort of change that, make we want to change that sort of mindset and make more systemic change. And we want to get, if you could change the language in this, or add language in this legislative program, that would definitely help to make the systemic change that we need to improve transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, Max. So with that, there is a motion. Is that a question that you have? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharon, for the work on this. One of the things, it's not just here, I even do this at the city, that I've been hoping that we as agencies who have paid advocates in Sacramento, that we could bring forward legislation that would be favorable to us. I think AB 805, regardless of how you felt of it, shows that we have a very unique opportunity in the state capitol, especially now with the pro tem being from San Diego, Senator Tony Atkins, to really get something moving that's beneficial to San Diego, maybe to the whole state, but obviously also San Diego. One of the things that I think been a little bit critical about is we don't have like one thing we're actually sponsoring to try to get through the process, especially with these people in positions of power up in Sacramento. And I would like to focus on that. I don't have a specific proposal to bring to you all here today, but I certainly think that in the spirit of TOD, item number 2 and item number 4 in the legislative program, and somewhat item number 5, we should be pushing for regulatory relief for and to get incentives as an agency if we work to create mixed use, especially housing, along our transit corridor, whether it's our trolley stations or near our trolley stations where MTS does own property. We should try to be strategic about that. We own property. How can we use that to our advantage? Could we get incentives in terms of more funding for us to purchase vehicles, also to do the capital improvements, if we collaborate with affordable housing development or something like that? We're doing that already, so why don't we try to get some policy statewide that says we will look more favorably to these projects when transit agencies are working in unison with private developers to produce this type of housing. So, you know, eliminating CEQA requirements, something that makes the process simpler, easier, so that there isn't delays, which cost money. You all know that. I don't need to get into that whole spiel, but that's what I would like to see. We have a lot of, like, support and opposed general ideas, but I think we really need to get to the point, as the second largest region in the state after Los Angeles, and this might be the, I don't know what, in terms of agency for transit, what number that is, but we need to start being a bigger player in the statewide system, the way that others have been able to maximize their influence in order to to really benefit our system. So that's more, I guess, of a general comment. I do want to see, again, more regulatory reduction when it comes to development along our transit lines, you know, with reduction of CEQA requirements. I think that could be something that could be of appetite in Sacramento with this governor, and maybe I'll try to think of more specific ideas going forward, and I'll bring him, if appropriate, back, and maybe we can have some legislation that we actually sponsor and try to get through up in Sacramento. Thank you. And I'll support or second the motion with the additions. Yeah.
Thank you. Jim?
Sure. I wasn't sure if there was a motion. I was going to make a motion to approve the recommendations with the staff with the addition of the chair's guidance on the passes.
Thank you. I believe we do have a motion. It's been seconded by David. The motion was made by Lori.
I do want to just make sure it's clear for the record that the motion maker approved the addition that was added by the chair. Yes.
Thank you. Definitely support us being more proactive, especially since we do have a strong legislating body that represents our region. So trying to make something out of it to benefit our region makes total sense. So with that, I'm going to call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? We have unanimous vote. Thank you. So we are over time. I do not know if there's any board members' comments.
Do we want to waive 45 or waive staff report?
Okay, due to time, I'm going to be asking if we can waive staff reports 45.
Yeah, just
are we okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, I believe...
motion to accept the report.
Okay, motion to accept the report. Thank you, Myrtle. Second. All those in favor? Thank you. Aye. Thank you. So with that, I believe I don't have my agenda in front of me.
60 is chairman's report.
I do not have anything to report aside from thank you everybody for electing me, and I will make you proud, and I will work extremely hard in making sure that we're moving forward our agenda. And then the chief executive, is there a report?
I don't have anything.
Nothing to report. Board members' communications?
There's no.
Okay. Mona?
Thank you very much. I would just also like to thank you for your vote of confidence. I too will work very hard, and although I know there's a significant time commitment, I'm willing to step up and meet that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mona. And we have no public comment, additional public comment speakers. With that, that brings our meeting to conclusion. Our next meeting is scheduled for February 8th, 2018. Thank you. February 15th. Thank you.
PC.